Today we will proceed into Jonah chapter 2. But first, Kaufman had written two essays on one on the great fish and second of Jonah being a parallel with Israel. And he has 7 points on that. So I thought we would cover these two essays that he wrote first. Now, he starts out on this essay about the great fish with an unfortunate mistranslation of the old King James of Matthew 12:40. And so I thought I would read that first and the mistranslation where they call this great fish, call it a whale. And that's caused confusion over time because it never was stated as a whale. It wasn't the Greek nor Hebrew word for whale here either in Jonah's account or in Matthew's account in the original Greek and Hebrew. And it should have just been a great fish now as the New King James corrected, or a sea monster as Hugo McCord in his translation. He translated it as a sea monster, and that's a good translation. But it shouldn't have been a whale because it's not identified what kind of animal. It's some kind of a sea creature of some sort that we never know and will never, there's no possible way to know. But I'll read first of in King James of Matthew 12:40, and they wrote and translated, "For as Jonas was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." And then the New King James, fortunately, corrected that by saying, "For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." So, in the belly of the great fish or in the belly of the sea monster or sea creature is much better than whale because it's not identified what kind of animal that this sea creature actually was. So, now with Kaufman's essay that he wrote about the great fish, he said the King James translators made an unfortunate mistranslation of Matthew 12:40, in which this great fish was called a whale. Fortunately, the New King James translators corrected the mistake with a great fish. Neither the Hebrew nor the Greek word for whale is found in either of these passages. There is no way of knowing what kind of fish this was. The event was described here is clearly beyond nature and above it. The supernatural is written on every word of this narrative. In nature, there is no such thing as a fish that could swallow a man without killing him. And it is a futile kind of vanity that looks for such a thing. As a type of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, this event was designed to be altogether above and beyond the ordinary circumstances in the realm of nature. So, what his comment is here, we don't know what kind of animal or what kind of fish that this was, and there's no way that we could possibly ever know, but this was supernaturally prepared by God. So, this was a miraculous event that God had this sea creature at the right place at the right time and commanded him to swallow Jonah at the appropriate time when he was dropped into the ocean, in which he did. So, but God was in control and miraculously was controlling this animal. A more pertinent question is whether Jonah remained alive for those 3 days and three nights within the belly of the great fish, or if God raised him from the dead upon the occasion of the great fish's vomiting him upon the dry land. The record of the prayer which Jonah prayed after being swallowed seems to argue that he was alive, But since the prayer was only a matter of a very few minutes duration, it falls short of proving Jonah's continued life within the fish's belly for a whole 3 days and three nights. So, he said a much better question to ask and to dwell on instead of what kind of animal sea creature this was is to think on whether Jonah was alive for the entire 3 days and three nights while he was in this sea creature's belly. And so then the argument is it a parallel, which he's going to get into next, so I'll just go ahead and continue reading about a parallel with Jesus, who Jesus compares himself to in relation to the death, burial, and resurrection of himself that he was about to go through. He said the sign is the prophet Jonah. So Kaufman continues, basing an argument upon the fact that Christ certainly was not alive for 3 days and three nights in the tomb, it is reasonable to conclude that Jonah was dead for 3 days and three nights, and then was resurrected and sent forth to preach. The event must be accepted as a sign from heaven, no matter how it is understood. That is, whether Jonah was maintained alive inside the fish for that extended period, or if he was resurrected after the fish vomited him out. It really serves no purpose to find examples of extraordinarily large specimens of ocean life, such as the Mediterranean white shark and others, which are alleged to have swallowed men or even horses. No such event ever heard of even approaches what is said here of Jonah. This is intended as a sign from God, the particular sign to which Jesus appealed in his struggle against the Pharisees, and the sign which he made above all others, the sign of his own death, burial, and resurrection in Matthew 12:38-40. And so now he included this in his essay. So I'll read Matthew 12:38-40 from the New King James. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But Jesus answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." And Kaufman says, he even went on to declare in verse 41 that the men of Nineveh will rise up in judgment with the generation and condemn it, with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and indeed a greater than Jonah is here. And in the verse after that, verse 42, Jesus went on to mention the queen of the south who would rise up in judgment and condemn the generation of the Pharisees. So, Matthew 12:42, the queen of the south will rise up in judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and indeed a greater than Solomon is here. And Kaufman concludes this essay with, "The only logical deduction that may be made from this statement is that the Messiah considered Jonah just as historical as the Queen of the South." And this is to go against the skeptics that say that Jonah was not a real prophet, and he was just imaginary. And this account of Jonah is a complete fiction. And so Kaufman said, the Messiah himself stated that Jonah was just as real as the Queen of the South. And of course, the Queen of the South, the Queen of Sheba, is known even historically in non-biblical text, and that she was written about non-biblically in secular history. And so there's no dispute that she was a true figure, And so the Messiah is saying that, is affirming that Jonah was just as real as the Queen of Sheba or the Queen of the South. So now we will go on to the next essay that he wrote, which is 7 points that show that Jonah was a parallel of Israel. And Kaufman said, "It should be noted that Jonah appeared as a remarkable type of Israel. Here is a list of 7 characteristics that Jonah had in common with Israel. Number 1, both Jonah and Israel were satisfied to live and stay in Judea." They didn't want to go outside of Judea. They wanted to just live and stay right there. Number 2, both Jonah and Israel despised the Gentiles. Number 3, both Jonah and Israel were unwilling to preach to the Gentiles. Number 4, for Jonah's failure, he was cast overboard. And for Israel's failure to preach to the Gentiles, Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD. And this also, for their failure and their refusal to be added to God's kingdom, then Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD. Number 5, Jonah was overruled by God, who required him to preach the word to the Gentiles. And Israel also, in the persons of the apostles, was required to preach the truth to the Gentiles. Number 6, Jonah's preaching resulted in many Gentiles repenting, and Israel spreading the gospel to the Gentiles by the Jewish apostles converted a host of Gentiles. So by Jonah giving the message of repentance to the Gentiles of Nineveh, they repented, and then with the Jewish apostles giving the good news of the gospel to the Gentiles, then that resulted in a host of Gentiles being converted and added to God's kingdom. Okay, the 7th and final characteristic of Jonah being a parallel of Israel is Jonah was angry by the Gentiles repenting, and Israel also stubbornly rejected all assertions that Gentiles should be accepted into God's kingdom. And that, of course, is very evident with the Apostle Paul. Everywhere he was going, the Jews all over Asia Minor, they tried to kill him, and he survived several assassination attempts. And so those were, I thought, several 7 good points. And I think he might have another essay that he's written. He's written, I believe, 3 essays, but I might not do one of them. So it might be 2 more essays that he's written at the end of Jonah that I will include after we finish chapter 4. Any questions or comments on anything here?